Mike Pesca in for Leonard Lopate on WNYC. And every birthday, Audrey Volk got the same present from her husband. Cecil would give his lovely, statuesque, proper wife a bottle of Elsa Schiaparelli's perfume called Shocking. Audrey very much appreciated that Cecil would wrap the perfume itself in, quote, as many $100 bills as it took to get the job done. That last turn of phrase was written by Audrey and Cecil's daughter, Patricia Volk. The subject of her new book is The Mother Who Dotted Her Pressure Points with the Perfume Called Shocking and the Woman Who Made the Perfume Itself. Patricia Volk, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
So this is the most important question. I pronounced Elsa Schiaparelli's name a couple of different ways. I think the public knows it one way and she said it another. What's the story on that?
Well, if you were in Rome, you would pronounce her name with five syllables, mm-hmm. Schiaparelli. But if you say Schiaparelli, that's just fine. However, she never used that name. She never wanted anybody to call her that. She wanted everyone to call her Scap. Her lovers, her 600 employees, her granddaughters, everyone called her Scap, and it suited her. She hated her first name, Elsa, which was her parents were unprepared to have a daughter. They were sure they were going to have a son. And when they brought her to St. Peter's to be baptized, the priest said, "What's her name?" And her parents just looked at each other like, "Huh?" And the wet nurse stepped in and said, the wet nurse whose name was Elsa, said, "Elsa." So she became Elsa. And she called being called Elsa her first disappointment.
Now, someone else in this book has an interesting story about how they were Mary Jane for a little while.
Oh, that was me. Yeah. My parents were also expecting a boy, and they didn't have a name for me. So after I was born, I had an older sister, and they were sure their second child would be a son, like the Schiaparellis. And so they were having a discussion about what to name me. And my mother really wanted Patricia, and my father wanted me to be Victoria Volk. He thought Vicky Volk was terrific.
It could be a Batman villainess or something.
Oh, yeah. And so finally my mother was exhausted, and she said, "Oh, name her anything you want. Name her Mary Jane." So my father went downtown and got my birth certificate to Mary Jane Volk, but they did change it to Patricia Gay.
How long were you Mary Jane?
I think about 4 days.
So this book is very much about identity as it happens. And, you know, obviously your mother made a huge imprint on you, as mothers do. And it was, as you presented, I'm sure that there were many ways, but you observing her as she would go about her womanly duties. And up until you were about 10 and read a very important biography, you know, what was your impression of your mother and how she defined what it meant to be a woman?
That's such a good question. My mother was also known as the most beautiful woman in the world. And I grew up thinking that that was the collateral that a woman had. And yet I distrusted it because it was something that you were born with. It wasn't something you made. And I would always watch my mother put her makeup on, and it was a very elaborate process, her maquillage. And at the very, very end of it, she would touch Elsa Schiaparelli's Shocking to her pulse points. So I was primed to kind of think Elsa Schiaparelli was a very important person. And when I was 10, I always read what my mother read, because I didn't read the books like the Bobbsey Twins or biographies of Madame Curie. I wanted to know what my mother was reading because I wanted to see what was more important than playing with me. Mm-hmm. And she read every day when she got home from the family restaurant. She read every day from 3 to 6. And you didn't want to interrupt her, because if you did, she would stab the sentence she was reading with her fingers so hard you could hear it. And what that meant was, what is more important than what I'm reading? And so anyway, one of the books that she was reading was Elsa Schiaparelli's memoir, Shocking Life. And when I read that book, it just changed everything.
Did you have any concept of Elsa Schiaparelli besides the name on those perfume bottles that your mom would get as a gift?
No, that was it. I mean, my mother would not have bought a Schiaparelli dress. They were $5,000 even in the 50s and the 40s. But she did have the little soaps in 3 sizes and the Shocking Pink Hearts. And she had the sachets. And I thought that that bottle of Shocking was the most valuable thing our family had.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a great graphic. I can't just call it a picture. It's labeled all the many different parts, from the Czech glass to the handcrafted flowers that go into a bottle. This was not just some tossed off mass marketed bauble.
No, this was, it took 30 people to assemble the 20 parts. It was very labor intensive. The pieces came from three different countries, and you can see them on the internet sometimes.
And so, okay, so you didn't really know Elsa Schiaparelli. You read her biography. What did you find out about her?
I found out that she was a lot like my mother, but she was also somebody, a totally different kind of role model, and that I could become a woman a totally different way than my mother had planned for me. And Elsa Schiaparelli was a lot like me. She had dyscalculia, which is just an inability to make sense out of numbers. It's something that affects 7% of the population.
It's the number version of dyslexia.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're not intelligent. You just can't process numbers. She wanted to be an artist. She liked to make things. She liked to try things. She took risks. These were things my mother was dead set against.
And I think, you know, your identity with should we call her that?
Scap
was also rooted in the fact if your mother was the most beautiful woman in the world and a natural beauty, Scap wasn't. And you looked at yourself and said, wait, if my mother defines everything in life and her agency comes from her beauty, and I'm told, well, what were you told? You're a nice little girl, but not as beautiful as mommy?
I was told I looked just like my father, which I wasn't sure worked for a girl. I was praised for my naturally curly hair, but of course I turned into a frizz ball with puberty overnight. It was said I had nice eyes, but I just sort of knew that I better develop something else, and I wanted to be responsible for what I was good at.
Right.
And I knew that looks didn't last. And I knew I wanted to take chances. I wanted to be authentic. I didn't want to sit in front of a vanity for an hour and a half putting pancake makeup on my face.
Mm-hmm. And it was through this autobiography that Scap wrote that this all became possible in your mind.
I started looking at my mother in a totally different way.
Yeah.
And I started seeing her as a very conservative person who was kind of afraid to take any chances. She always said she would have been a lawyer if my sister hadn't been born. Well, she could have been a lawyer. What was that about? And I didn't want to be like her. And nor could I be like her.
This is Mike Pesca on WNYC, sitting in for Leonard Lope, talking to Patricia Volk, the author of Shocked, My Mother, Schiaparelli, and Me. A lot of controversy about the pronunciation of Scap's name. Was you probably, you know, you were 10. This was about the age you'd be going through the normal cycle of rejecting the parent. Did reading this biography exacerbate it? Or did you... Did you kind of come around and not go the entire 180 and saying, not just that my mother has different ways of being a woman and adult, but she's wrong? Did you say she was wrong or just different?
I thought she was wrong.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
And 10 is an incredible age to happen upon the transformative book, because you have one foot in your family life, which is everything you've known, but you've got one foot in the other life. And usually the transformative book comes right before puberty.
Yeah.
So I would say that I was primed to be ready for this book.
If I had met you at 11 or your friends who knew you, did you know you were obsessed by Schiaparelli?
You know, she just sort of opened the door for me. And it wasn't until my mother got very, very sick in 2003, which also kind of came at the same time that the Schiaparelli retrospective took place at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, that I started thinking about her again. And then I wanted to see the book. It was 50 years after I'd read it. I wanted to see what it was about that book that moved me. Of course, I saw things in it that I hadn't seen the first reading, that a 10-year-old would not understand. But that was an incredible process, relooking at that book. And I asked my mother if I could have her bottle of Shocking that she had kept all those years. And she said, what do you want with that? And I said, I don't know, I just want it. So I went into her guest bathroom and there it was. And I took it and I opened it up and I took a whiff. And it was like a genie came out of the bottle and I remembered everything.
Yeah.
I was an oppositional kid anyway. I always wanted to know why. I had a gift for annoying people.
Well, yeah, it's that sense memory and Proustian, I guess all the Proustian ideas about the Madelines are true. Your mother and Schiaparelli also made lists. Your mother had 10 lists for catching and keeping a man, 10 tips, and Schiaparelli had her own list of 12. And some of them seem to me to be great wisdom from wise people, and some seem to be hopelessly out of date since, like, listen to this. Here's number one from Schiaparelli's list. Since most women do not know themselves, they should try to do so. I think Oprah Winfrey made $1 billion based on that. But then she goes on to say things like, they, women, should never shop with another woman who is sometimes consciously and often unconsciously apt to be jealous. And she also says, never fit a dress to the body. Train the body to fit the dress. Some ways she was a feminist. In some ways, like body image, she definitely wasn't.
Oh, my God. She thought women should be skin and bones. And really, her three greatest patrons, Daisy Fellows, Nancy Cunard, and, oh, God, I can't remember the last one. But they were skin and bones. And for breakfast, Elsa Schiaparelli had a piece of lemon and a cup of warm water.
Yeah.
So she really, she wanted her people to look like scarecrows, and that was the best look to wear her clothes. But yeah, I would say for a woman who could be perceived as a feminist, certainly she broke every rule. She was a renegade, and I loved that about her. She was she had very definite ideas about how people should wear her clothes.
And she's kind of fallen away in a way that Coco Chanel, her contemporary, hasn't. I mean, we remember Chanel, but Schiaparelli is more of maybe because her brand doesn't survive in the way some others do, but more of a relic of the past. Is that because of actions she took during her life or just fate?
Well, in 1954, she went bankrupt. She couldn't really change with the times after the war, and women weren't interested in wearing surreal clothes and heavily embroidered things. They were wearing Claire McCardell and clothes you could be very active in. But Schiaparelli is about to be relaunched. Diego Della Valle of the Todd's Group has purchased the name Schiaparelli. He's totally redone her atelier at 21 Place Vendôme in this wonderful way. He found the Giacometti furniture. The Giacometti, Schiaparelli always hired artists to do her thing. So the Giacometti brothers, Alberto and Diego, made her furniture for that atelier, and they have it. And the glasses that Man Ray made for her, they're there too. And anyway, what's stopping the relaunch is they haven't found the right designer yet. When I went there, I got a fellowship, and I went there and I talked to them, and I said, well, what about Galliano? He's, you know, I know he's not a favorite son at the moment, but he is really an heir to her, as is Jean-Paul Gaultier and, of course, McQueen. But they said, no, it's too soon.
Was before Galliano made those crazily anti-Semitic.
No, actually, I said it afterwards.
Oh, really?
Because a couple of years had gone by. But
anti-Semitic remarks is... And then even at Fashion Week, he doubled down on that, didn't
he? Oh, gosh, dressing like a Hasidic person.
Yeah. And you are Jewish, and your family had this restaurant in the Garment District. And I actually found a 2000 obit that the Times ran about your dad. And it's not in the book, but your dad seems to be this fascinating character who was a card who invented things like, I need to ask you why he thought a lighter that lit on both ends would work.
Well, he made it work. It did work. But he thought, you know, if a man reaches into his pocket to light a woman's cigarette, he can't get the wrong end. He can't be wrong.
And then there was, I mean, maybe this is exaggerated for comic effect. He started a store that would sell frozen food, but only frozen food.
That's only frozen food. Yeah. It was the Penguin Food Store on 6th Avenue and 11th Street. And he had this, women were going to work because of the war. And it's really kind of a good idea. I mean, frozen food was a sort of new thing. And he thought, no one's going to want to come home and start cooking. They can just defrost this in the morning and it'll be ready at night. But the Penguin Food Store, which was decorated with icicles.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
I know this is about Schiaparelli and your mom, but those two anecdotes showed me or tell me that he was a little bit of the innovator and the, iconoclast himself, maybe.
He was. And I think I much more modeled myself on him than on my mother. He was a much better role model for me. He was authentic. He was free. He took chances. And he was a lot of fun. He wasn't corrective. I mean, look, it goes with the turf. You're a mother, you're going to correct your children. But my mother she just had these rules that I didn't understand. Like, why did I have to sit with my legs crossed at the ankle? Would it really destroy my marriage if a man saw me with cold cream on my face? I didn't get it.
So, and the last question that I have is the book itself, the physical book. It is in a color, shocking pink,
yeah,
which Scalparelli invented,
yes.
I take it. And the texture of it, is the texture inspired by anything?
Because yes, she had
great
a
to feel.
She had elaborate beadwork on her work. It was done by the firm of Lesage, and she decorated her clothes to the nines. And so the cover is actually three-dimensional beadwork with the title picked out in the beads in black.
So the Kindle buyer will be denied this feeling
if they
get the book on Kindle or on the Barnes & Noble Nook.
I would suggest that they buy the hardback copy, too.
I think the authors get paid more from the hardback copy. We have been speaking with Patricia Volk. Her memoir is called Shocked, My Mother Scalparelli, you know, so many ways to pronounce it. And me, Patricia Volk, who is the author of another memoir called Stuffed. If you want to meet Patricia Volk and ask her how she pronounces the name, she'll be appearing at the Corner Bookstore tonight at 6 o'clock. That's 72nd and Madison.
No,
93rd and Madison is the Corner Bookstore.
Yeah.
And is there another upcoming event?
Yeah, there's something at the Macaulay Center, but I forget what the name is. And there's... Oh, gosh.
It's okay.
Thank you,
Shocked
Mike.
Shocked is the book. You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Thank you.